Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 124, part 2. My name is John. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? After years of fan campaigning, Warner Brothers has announced that Zack Snyder's version of Justice League will be released on HBO Max sometime next year. Is it going to be better or worse than the theatrical release? Will the fans that rallied so long for the opportunity to see the director's true vision cheer the work? Will the critics continue to rate the movie considerably lower than the general public does? How the fuck should I know? If you've listened to my podcast about the DC superhero movies that I've done over the past few years, you know I begrudgingly accept the lighter tone they have adopted in response to the negative feedback from Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. I don't think it's necessary. We already have nearly 24 movies from another superhero universe with a decidedly lighter tone. They also tend to look pretty, have charismatic characters, yet are predictable with simplistic recycled plots. The darker, more thought-provoking DC movies were a nice counterbalance. Nevertheless, when Zack Snyder had to leave Justice League during post-production due to the death of his daughter, Warner Brothers had Joss Whedon finish the film along with some reshot scenes that lightened the tone and turned it into a run-of-the-Marvel superhero movie. And yes, I still loved it. I saw it 7 times in the theater, more than I've ever watched any movie in its first run. I've lost track of how many times I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show, but I would guess it's probably in the mid to upper 30s. That's the only movie I've seen more in a theater after its first run. The fact is, I was probably going to love Justice League no matter what. With the exception of the stupidest Batman line since the Schumacher turds, I was fine with it. Aquaman's introduction to the DC Universe was great. Batman challenging Wonder Woman for being in hiding for decades, that was clever. The Flash worked fine as the neurotic newbie, though I still wonder how he got his powers if he didn't start working in the police lab until the end of the movie. People complained about Ray Fisher's Cyborg, but I thought he nailed the angst the character had in the early New Teen Titans stories of the 80s. Yes, I wanted even deeper characters and a little darker, dangerous vibe. But this is still a movie of my all-time favorite superhero group. It's like when your best friend is in a talent show and they do a good job, but you know they could have done better. You still give your friend all the love and praise because they're your friend. So yeah, I don't like the fact that they made it too much like the first two Avengers movies. You know, bickering heroes fighting amongst themselves, underwhelming villain with an army of soldiers who all look alike. But it's the Justice League, so I'm going to love them. Again, I get it. Warner Brothers wants to make money, and when you have a bunch of people whose last interaction with Superman was a Christopher Reeve movie, they expect the bungling Clark Kent to jump in the phone booth, put his underwear on outside his clothes, punch a bad guy, and mug for the camera while doing a victory lap around the Earth. A Superman who is struggling to find his place in the cynical modern world is just too deep for those kind of people. It still pisses me off that a predominant comic book writer claimed that he got up and walked out of Man of Steel because Superman doesn't kill. In Man of Steel, Superman is desperately trying to prevent Zod from burning a family to death with his heat vision. Zod will not relent and is hell-bent on committing genocide. So Superman snaps his neck. Many people echoed the Superman doesn't kill sentiment. Except, in 1980, at the end of Superman 2 with Christopher Reeve, the beloved hero depowers the Phantom Zone villains, Zod, Ursa, and Non, in the Fortress of Solitude, basically turning them into your average human, while Superman remains a powerful Kryptonian. Superman proceeds to crush the hand of a powerless Zod for no other reason than to prove how fragile Zod has become, then lets Zod fall to his death down an Arctic chasm without even thinking about saving him. Then he lets the powerless Non fall to his death without trying to save him either. Then he watches Lois punch the powerless Ursa, who falls to her death into the chasm. And Superman watches all of this, turns to Lois, and smiles. So you can just fuck off with this Superman doesn't kill bullshit. Not only does he kill, the standard you place on a pedestal killed Zod in the most heinous and frankly unheroic manner. Yeah, you can say that snapping a villain's neck because he's trying to immolate a family is dark, but taking away your enemy's powers and then letting them either freeze or fall to their death is some pretty sick shit. It's funny. When I was growing up, my friends loved Marvel comics because they were real. Their problems reflected the real world. DC had their stories as well, set with real-world problems, but Marvel struck a chord with my friends. Now, the same people who praised Marvel for putting their heroes in real-world situations when they were growing up have decided DC movies are inferior for the exact same reasons. Man of Steel was brilliant at presenting how people would react to a superpowered individual. You have the loving parents who would be terrified that government would come to take away and dissect their child. You have a reporter who would stop at nothing to uncover the story of the century. You have a government reacting with more paranoia than the citizenry could ever come up with. Then you have a genocidal megalomaniac with godlike powers rampaging through a city. The destruction is hauntingly realistic. That made people question whether it was worth having a powerful hero around if it meant threats like that coming to our world. Maybe that means trying to control the hero. But who would be in control, and how would they do it? That notion was explored in Batman vs. Superman, and people, or at least critics, didn't like that idea either. They also must have never read The Death of Superman or The Dark Knight Returns storylines that the movie borrowed heavily from. Zack Snyder had a plan that required DC's premier heroes to begin in a very dark world, and their efforts bring it into the light. People just didn't want to wait for it, apparently. But I prefer that over everything always being light. And you know, no matter how bad it gets, the hero is never in any real danger of losing. There's a lot to look forward to with Zack Snyder's Justice League. I've said before that Steppenwolf was, at best, an okay choice for a first villain. But not having Darkseid make even a brief appearance was a mistake. I mean, when Cyborg is connected to the Mother Boxes at the end of the movie, wouldn't that have been a perfect time to catch a vision of the ultimate evil in the DC universe? Darkseid is said to be in Zack Snyder's Justice League. Also, there's supposed to be a cameo of Martian Manhunter. Now, David Harewood has done a good job with the character on the Supergirl TV show, despite having the limitations of a TV show budget. So the idea of that character in a movie is a big plus for me. I've said before, I prefer the second and third tier characters more than I do Batman and Superman. There's talk of more Green Lanterns in the movie. To be honest, I was completely unfamiliar with the one they used in the theatrical release. That particular Green Lantern made only one appearance in the comics, and it was a story I'd never heard of before. Would the movie have a resolution to the nightmare scene in Batman vs. Superman, or was that still to come with the abandoned sequel? I'd bet the original plan was to have the League defeat Steppenwolf and think they've won when Darkseid shows up and demolishes them, maybe even killing Lois in the process. That's why Superman has lost it in Batman's vision of the future. Darkseid is in control, and Flash needs to try to time travel to warn them in the past. Finally, there are rumors that the post-credits scene is different too, with Joe Manganiello posting on social media that it was changed from the Snyder version. But that mid-credits tribute to the classic Flash-Superman races? I'd keep that if I could. Here's what I know. There is an obvious contingent of people who will hate this movie no matter what. At the beginning of this, I mentioned there are people who are only able to think of Superman as the brightly colored, homogenized, slightly campy, aw shucks, late 70s Christopher Reeve with the glistening smile. That kind of myopia, and as I mentioned, denial, will continue to taint their views. Similarly, there are others who are only able to think of the superhero genre as shiny, shallow popcorn movies where the good guy quips his way through the battle. Now, whether they hazily remember the comic book and cartoons they haven't encountered since their tweens, or they're biased by the output of the Mouse Factory, they just aren't going to like a movie made by a director who gives even the mightiest hero self-doubt. Then again, maybe it's the director himself that some people just seem to hate. I get that, because there are directors I don't care for. I tend to avoid Michael Bay movies, and Roland Emmerich makes a watchable movie about 16% of the time. Maybe if you have that kind of bias, you should explain that in your review so people know you have an agenda. I really think bias against Zack Snyder is the cause of most of the bad reviews. Of course, the conspiracy theorist in me wonders how many of those bad reviews are from a critic who draws a paycheck from Disney. As far as Snyder's DC movies go, I've said time and again, Man of Steel is a great movie and an even better Superman movie. Batman vs. Superman is also a good movie, but the theatrical release was marred by jittery Warner Brothers executives who damaged the finished product. For instance, early on, the woman testifying before Congress described what happened after Superman saved Lois from the Warlord. I was confused the first time watching it, and I wondered, why didn't they show what happened instead of having somebody talk about it? And why didn't they show this person witnessing the atrocity she described? Well, the director's cut of the movie shows the bloodbath that happened, and you find out she was never there to begin with. It's a longer, slower, and more violent movie. But it's a stronger story. So, I don't know what will happen when Zack Snyder's Justice League is released next year. But if the director's cut of Batman vs. Superman is any indication, it'll make me a lot happier. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.